This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everybody, to the bonus episode of Aftershock Central Podcast. Martin is out, so that means that it's just me, Ronnie, here like normal. But with Martin out, I have a better co-host, and that would be Mr. Donnie Cates.
Hey, hey, hey.
How are you doing? I knew that you've been laid up. Has that been getting better?
It's fine.
Okay.
I'm waiting for test results to come back, but
That's cool. Right. Actually, quick story. The guys, we have part of we're a big podcast network. I'd say there's probably 20 of us, and we all met at C2E2 last year, where you were at. And you were actually around the Valiant booth, and we were having a Valiant book signed. Anybody that we can grab, we were having it signed for one of our friends. And you signed that book. And you were really reluctant to sign that book. You were like, dude, I didn't even have nothing to do with this. I'm just here. And Dinesh was like, hey, sign this book. So, do you remember that by chance?
Yeah, I kind of maybe barely recall that.
Well, I mean, that's just a fan marking out saying, hey, do you remember me of, 6 billion people? You know what I mean? So, but it was so cool because, that was... For me, anyways, personally, that was the moment you were so cool and so humble about it, right? And because I was one of the normal ones or first ones of our group. Martin was actually the first one, he'll tell you, because he's a hipster. But, to read Ghost Fleet, right?
Oh, cool.
And so, that became, a running inside joke for us because, Martin would preach it all the time, hey, you guys need to read this. Hey, you guys need to read this. And then I read it, and then he and I would talk back and forth. And then everybody was like, well, I don't even know what this is, blah, blah,
yeah.
blah. And so then that's where the meme came from that,
oh, right. yeah,
that
yeah.
we made. And so then we just push it out all the time. So that's our inside joke.
Yeah, it's funny.
But so at this point, you've been in... books, what, 6 years?
Yeah, a little over five.
Over five? Okay. And Ghost Fleet was that your first published thing?
No. My first thing was a Dark Horse Presents story.
Okay.
A little 8-pager, and then I did Buzzkill was my first big thing.
Yep.
And then Ghost Fleet was second, and then Paybacks.
Okay. Gotcha. And so then when we heard you talk Martin heard you talk at the South Carolina at the Heroes Con when you did the horrors thing about baby teeth and when you guys were promoting that, and then you guys also talked about it at the Aftershock panel at C2E2.
Yeah, right.
But before that, the next thing was God Country, right? Or did you ever do backup stuff in Valiant?
Yeah, I wrote I think right after Ghost Fleet, I wrote two 10-pagers or so for Valiant, one for Archer and Armstrong, and then one for Unity, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They're 20, number 25s, I think. That's where they're...
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I couldn't, honestly, gun to my head, I couldn't tell you what they were about. It's so long ago. And then I wrote a few other books, but then, God Country was the big, kind of the big breakout one. That was my first Image book.
Right. That was, like you said, that was your shooting to the stars, where now you're a rock star
kind of
thing, right?
Sure.
So when you pitched that book, it was always six issues and done, right? There was no going back or.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, every book that I had pitched before that was always meant to be an ongoing, and then just got canceled. You know, Ghost Fleet was supposed to be 12 issues, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the Paybacks was supposed to be an ongoing. Buzzkill was supposed to be 12 issues, and they all got cut short. And then God Country, I actually really did just want to do six issues, because that was, you know, those are some of my favorite comics are the ones you can just hand one trade to someone, you know, and say, right, this is the whole thing. And then, you know, as luck would have it, that ended up being the book that everyone wanted more of.
Right. That was your lightning in the bottle type thing.
I guess so. Yeah.
Well, for now anyways, right? Because you're mm-hmm. still. So from then, so did you pitch the baby teeth idea to Joe and them and Mike?
Yeah. I met Mike and Lee Kramer at San Diego Comic-Con. John Hill, who did all the design for God Country and Atomahawk and we're working together a lot. He's doing a bunch of stuff for me in the future. John was doing all the design for Aftershock and shot an email over to those guys and said, hey, you should meet Donnie. We met up at San Diego Comic-Con and I pitched him a bunch of stuff that they didn't dig. One of them I think we're actually going to do next year. But yeah, I pitched him a bunch of stuff, just little creator-owned ideas I had. And then none of it really landed. And then, I don't know, maybe a few months went by, and on like a Sunday night, I thought of the idea for Baby Teeth. On the next day, Monday, I just sat down and wrote the pitch out with no plan, really.
Right.
I do that all the time. If I have an idea in my head, I try to excise it and just have the pitch there and get it out of my head. And 9 times out of 10, I write the pitch out, and then I'll put it in a drawer and just, you know, allow it to sit. God Country was that way. I wrote that pitch in like 2007, and never really thought about it again. And then came back around to it and was just like, oh, that there was some good stuff in there, and kind of retooled it. Yeah, and like 9 times out of 10, I just leave it alone. I have to get it out of my head, and then I get it out of my head, and I'll go back to it and say, you know, that wasn't really there. Like, I didn't really like that as much as I wanted to. But on Baby Teeth, I thought of the idea on a Sunday night. I wrote the pitch on Monday. Monday night, I sent it to Mike Martz. Less as like a pitch, and more of a, hey, this is this weird thing I thought of. I went ahead and typed it up. What do you think about this? And Tuesday they called and approved it.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's the quickest turnaround that's ever been done for any book I've ever had. It was very weird. And especially at that time, you know, God Country hadn't come out yet and Redneck hadn't come out yet.
Right.
And so there wasn't really like that kind of heat that I had, I'm still kind of riding that wave of, that wasn't there. So it's not like they were approving a pitch based on, you know, my sales or popularity or anything like that. It was just a cool idea that they really, and you know, honestly, the pitch for Baby Teeth came out pretty fully formed. We've talked about when we collect the whole thing into one big like omnibus or something, we're going to put the pitch in there, because nothing's really changed. Everything was in there, including the raccoon and Dancy, and everything was in there from the jump. I had a very oddly concrete idea of the tone I wanted to go for in it. So it all came together very naturally, I guess.
So, yeah. So is this one a set number of issues, or is it just we're gonna see how it goes, like season by season, kind of like what Adam's doing with Rough Rider style?
Well, we're not gonna be taking any breaks, you know. It's definitely an ongoing. I definitely know how it ends. I don't see it being. you know, the sales are really great. And, you know, if we wanted to keep it going, 60 issues or some kind of crazy nonsense, we probably could. But, you know, I don't want to wear out our welcome, and I definitely have an endpoint in mind. As to where that endpoint will land, how many issues, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I'm having a good time, just kind of exploring the world as we go along. And there's some big milestones that I want to hit coming up. Issue 10 will kind of see the first phase of the book wrap up. You know, where we began in issue 1 with Sadie from the future telling this story. You know, the last page of the first issue sees her in Palestine 1 year into the future, and issue 10 will get us to that point.
To the point. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, there's big stuff coming for sure.
And that's one thing that across all of your books, I mean, even with Thanos and Doctor Strange, even nothing feels the same. If that makes sense. Like with Baby Teeth, you do the time placement, like telling the story flashback style to get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of Christopher Priest style, if you will.
No, that's a high compliment.
And then, like, you know, and like Ghost Fleet's like high action, cheesy 80s popcorn,
yeah.
You know, go for
yeah, totally.
It thing. So, yeah, and I know it's one of our on this podcast's favorite book. That Aftershock's doing for sure.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so it gets like, you know, 4.5, 5s all the time. But and we got the trade for Volume 1 just came out last week, right?
This week, yeah. Two days ago or
yesterday?
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So is there anything like? For the next couple of phase or the next phase that we should be looking forward to with that part of it?
Oh,
or nothing
I don't
that
spoil
you don't
too
spoil.
Much. Yeah, no, yeah that's yeah. I can really talk about. I mean, in the second arc, which we're like one issue deep into right now.
Right.
We're going to start turning over a lot of cards. We're going to start answering a lot of, long running, you know, things that are up in the air and everything.
Yeah. Because the last issue that came out left us in a huge cliffhanger to where
the last issue got us to the way, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and we met Sadie's mom.
Right.
Christine.
Yeah.
And Chris is going to be a very, you know, Chris is a character that we've been kind of talking about and alluding to since, God, the first issue.
Right.
And she's been noticeably absent. From the book and from Sadie's life. And there's a big reason for that. That's a lot of what we're going to be exploring, in the second arc. You know, there's a lot of fathers and sons and moms and daughters and things. I mean, you have the coyote, who is, been hired to replace his daughter, on her journey. And I think people are going to be really surprised by where his path takes him.
Yeah.
And we're also going to learn something pretty huge and shocking about Dancy, about Christine and her connection to everything that's been going on, about the purpose of the way in general. In the first arc, there's a brief mention of Sadie not being the first mom who has given birth to an Antichrist. There's a different girl out there who they never really tracked down. We're going to learn more about her as well.
Awesome. Yeah, because it seems like with the characters that are in play right now, there's like so much stuff that you guys can explore.
Yeah, totally.
And like a universe all of its own type of thing. And like you said, with the bounty hunter guy, he's a no bullshit type of guy, especially when they came and picked him up and he just opened fired and it was gone.
Yeah, he's not really wild about any of this bullshit. the Coyotes is not he's not into being played,
right?
Really being any, you know, we get the sense from him. He's, to me, he's kind of this like backwoods Constantine kind of a guy, right. You know. He's seen it all. He's not really fazed by anything, and whereas in the past he's been kind of ruled by whoever hires him and these jobs he does and everything, he has a kind of a new journey in front of him, which is that of a grieving father. And he has his own, you know, burdens to carry as we go along, you know?
Yeah. So is there like a said, obviously Sadie's our main good guy, I guess, in the book, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Or our antagonist, I guess.
Protagonist,
right, yeah.
Yeah.
So right now, the bounty hunters would be the main setup in the. It just seems like reading your stuff before, like there's going to be this one big curveball that throws everything on its head, type of thing, right?
Oh yeah.
So like every. This might be bad, but like every issue, I'm like, okay, where's the curveball coming? You know what I mean? Because. Shit's gonna hit the fan here sooner or later, and nothing's gonna seem like what you thought it was, or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's something that I kind of I'm very proud of in that series is that you know, nothing is ever the way that you think it's gonna go. You know, I the premise on its head, you know, is you know, I didn't invent the concept of the Antichrist.
Right.
You know, or right. Even of a mom raising one, you know, but I like to think that Baby Teeth does a good job of subverting anyone's kind of preconceived ideas about what that kind of story would be, right. You know, just from its very kind of its inception, you know, it's what I like about it so much. And it's why I kind of latched onto it as hard as I did when I started to write it. You know, all these Antichrist, you know, films and books and stuff like that. What you normally get is a mother who is terrified by her child or preyed upon by it or wants to kill it or anything. Mm-hmm. And I thought this idea of, you know, this young girl saying, no, it's my kid, man. Like, I love my kid.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to let anybody else tell me what's going on with my kid, and I'm going to protect this kid. And from that angle, you know, it's this kind of, it's kind of this odd notion in the book, because when you really step back from it, it's very easy when you're reading it to paint the evil shadowy council as the bad guys,
right.
And the way as the good guys and all these things. Mm-hmm. But really, when you break it down, that's not true. The silhouette are the good guys. They are trying to avert the apocalypse. I mean, they are trying to stop, you know, the end of the world.
Right.
And the way wants to put Clark on a throne.
Right.
And that's not good. Like, yeah. You know, but it's kind of all in how it's painted. You know, even Sadie could be seen as a monster in this by how kind of, you know, naive and, you know, she kind of refuses to accept in the first issue when she's talking to Clark about his birth. And she says, you know, the earthquake stopped the moment you took your first breath. Do you know what that means? That means that you saved the world with your first breath.
Right.
And she's completely ignoring the fact that, like, well, yeah, sure. But, like, he also caused that earthquake.
Right.
Silly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, the way that to me says so much about Sadie, you know, mm-hmm. And that a lot of times her love for her child kind of blinds her to the obvious. That being said, I like to think that it's, you know, obviously the book has a lot of big, you know, fantastical trappings and you know, for as real as it can be emotionally, it is still a comic book. And so, you know, people maybe don't freak out as much as they should. But at the same time, I tried to approach it with a character who would maybe approach these things the way that normal people would, mm-hmm. because normal people wouldn't assume their child is the Antichrist.
Right.
You know, I mean, right. they would think it's weird, certainly, and they'd be fucking scared. And, right. you know, they would probably take a step that Sadie doesn't take, which is I need to take my kid to the emergency room because it's drinking blood.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think that, you know, I like the idea that, I mean, so far in the story, Sadie's never even been told that he's the Antichrist. That hasn't happened yet.
Right, yeah.
You know, yep. like Sadie from the future, who is telling you this story, knows it. But the Sadie in the story doesn't even know that yet. Those words have never been spoken to her.
Right.
You know, so it's fun. You know, it's got a lot of heart. And it's very different than anything else I write. It's a lot slower. It's a lot more character based.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Was the characters like everybody has their own? You can get the sense of everything from everybody, like whether it be Sadie or Heather or hell, even Sadie's asshole boyfriend. That you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, and then Dancy when he shows up. Well, then I think. On the past episode where we reviewed that issue, like, Martin and I both got the feel, like, that, you know, he was the smooth-talking, stereotypical-type vampire-esque guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the Way would be, like, a cult-type thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and like we said, you know, we've seen plenty of movies, we read plenty of books to know that the cult's not always what you think it is, even if it's Scientology, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right. So. Yeah, right. Yeah, and Dancy, you know, Gary Brown and I were talking about this. Gary really loves drawing that guy because he's kind of the first comic book character in the book.
Yeah,
like he's kind of the first guy who has like an outfit and like looks like a fucking weirdo, and you know, yeah. it's got crazy red eyes and magic and shit, you know, and
right.
like that. And the demon raccoon yeah. are kind of the first instances of like, oh yeah, this is a comic book. Like right. this is yeah. gonna get real fucking weird, you know.
yeah. But yeah, and like I said, when we everything, and then like we knew that in the back of our mind, from like you said from issue one that. Christine was still alive, but we weren't sure how it was or even if she was going to come back or not.
Yeah, right.
And then when the doors open yep. and you see her standing there, that's like a gut punch from hell right there.
Yeah, yeah.
At least from the girls' point of view and especially from her dad's point of view.
Yeah, totally. And you get the sense from how Mike reacts to her that this is not someone that he wants in these girls' lives.
Right.
You know? And she's also just Jamie Lee Curtis, which is fun.
Yes. I think I said that in that review issue too, that,
oh yeah,
because that's the one thing that we noticed is like, I don't know if you do this intentionally. I'm assuming, or we're assuming you do, but like, the 80s and 90s references
mm-hmm.
are always sprinkled out through there.
Oh, yeah, totally. And yeah, it's so, just kind of a – I mean, Sadie, you know, despite the obvious disparages between us in age and gender, Sadie's probably the most like me of any character I write. And so she's just kind of into all the same shit I'm into.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So that makes it easy. Does that make it easier to write her then?
She's really fun and easy to write for me. I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff that I write, you know, Baby Teeth in a lot of respects, it was kind of a response to a lot of the things that I was writing at the time. You know, I was writing God Country and Redneck at the time, which are both very, you know, fathers and sons and kind of a masculine view. And there are these kind of gritty old wise, you know, in Redneck's case, like 200-year-old, you know, redneck poets, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to write something that was, a little bit softer, a little bit younger. you know, the feminine voice that I write in on that book is such a blast and a relief, and not so much even the feminine of it all, but just the young of it all, you know. You know, she
the
talks
and every, part of it.
The what?
The innocence part of it, like pureness.
Yeah, she talks in very uncomplicated language. She talks in a very plain way, and also, you know, the fact that she is, you know, she's telling this story to her son, you know, and the way that she kind of weaves in and out of stories, and is maybe not the greatest storyteller in the world. You know, she's not a writer or anything. Right, she's just a in the future she's 17, but in the main story she's 16. You know, she's just doing the best she can, and she's trying to wrap her head around it. And so, you know, I do it a lot where there's points where she's just like, "Look, I'm doing the best I can here, but I don't really fucking claim to understand this." You know, and so that's all very fun and easy to write. You know. You know, when someone doesn't really have to go out of their way to make profound statements about everything, they're just simply trying to convey information and get it out in a way that is digestible and understandable. Right. You know, it's you know, Beatty is always the book that I write. I've said this in other podcasts. It's always the book that I save for the end of the month because, God, I mean, after writing Doctor Strange and Loki and Thanos and Redneck, you know, and all the other books that I write, it's always a nice relief to jump into that book and just have it kind of flow out very naturally. Because it's, you know, the way that Sadie is telling the story is very akin to how I would just tell the story about how, you know, if I was sitting down with my buddies and they asked me what Baby Teeth was about, what came out of my mouth would be very close to how Sadie describes things, right. You know?
And she catches herself like jumping far ahead in the story too.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're not there yet. And then, you know,
And so in that respect, it's very easy. I say that, but the story itself, beyond just the narrative voice, is very easy for me to slide into. But the book is very complex way that it's structured and the way that information is doled out and the order of scenes and the jumping through time and all those things can get pretty dense. And that's also why I really like her telling the story, because she makes what could be an overwhelming amount of information seem very natural, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like when we first read this, and of course, you going to Marvel hadn't been announced or even, you know, at this point we have two issues of Doctor Strange and one issue of Thanos, but like, I said that I would love to see you write Constantine, because that's kind of what this world feels like.
Sure.
Per se. I mean, of course, Constantine has magic and all that stuff in this world. Well,
we got
may
magic.
Or may not. Yeah. Well, I mean, we have the Antichrist in this world, so.
Well, Danny's a warlock. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So it's like, that was my pick for you. If you'd like me to pitch that later on down the line.
Well, it's funny you say that, because right before I signed my exclusive at DC or at Marvel, I was actually in talks with DC on a number of different titles. We were still trying to narrow it down, and what we ultimately settled on was Constantine. And I was in the process of the pitch had been approved, and I was talking with people over there, and I was about ready to start writing my first issue when exclusive came down. And you know, there's no bad feelings or anything. Those guys are great over there, and they understood. But yeah, Constantine's one of my favorite characters for sure. That's not, you know, that I think even in some of those scripts, like when we're, you know, talking about, I mean, Coyote was always supposed to kind of be like a you know, redneck Texan Constantine demon. Like if Constantine got hired by the government, you know, right. kind of a thing, and it was just fucking over it, you know?
Yeah. And see, I don't know why, but like every time I see Coyote, I always think of like Bruce Willis style.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just because, you know, I mean, not like fan casting if it ever gets picked up or whatever, but you know, like you said, like Sigourney was there, so
yeah. You know.
Off that, well, I picked Constantine, by the way, and then Martin picked. He wanted you to write Batman because Batman's like his all-time favorite character.
Man, I have a document on my computer that I've been adding to every now and then. It's I currently have 5 years of storylines for Batman if I ever got that gig.
There you go.
You know, I'm extremely happy to be at Marvel, and I love it there. And, you know, fingers crossed, knock on wood, I'll be there for 20 years. You know, but if the winds ever change or anything, you know, I'm not in a hurry. But, you know, I do love that Batman.
The point I was like, you got, or I pitched you for Constantine, but then you got the Marvel thing, and you got Doctor Strange. You know, and right now to me, it's like Doctor Strange is more grounded than it's ever been before.
Some people don't like that.
Really?
Well, you know, some people like their Doctor Strange to be a little bit more out there, I think, you know.
Or is it just because, you know, Jason got off his run and then it's like, who the hell's this Donnie Cates guy, you know, type of thing? Because, like, like being fans of, like, Valiant, for example, when Dysart quit writing Harbinger and then another writer took over, you know, then it was like bashing because it wasn't Dysart Harbinger, you know, type of thing.
You know, so. I haven't gotten that much of really. Actually, I haven't gotten any of the like the who is this guy coming in kind of a thing not. I mean, you know, I don't think that.
Or is it just the story part of it?
I don't think that Jason and I are too dissimilar in the kind of the things that we. You know, obviously, Jason is a better writer than I will ever be. Jason, in this man's opinion, is the greatest comic book writer alive. And so it was, I mean, I'm a huge Jason Aaron fan. He's my number one favorite guy. I've loved everything he's ever done. You know, I was gonna say
he's my number one and you're my number two and Kent and Lemire's like tie for three. But since you brought it up, I wasn't gonna say that, but since you brought it up, yeah, because like I saw him, and I got scalp number one signed by him, and number 60. So that was like my holy grail. Is like, you know. But yeah, you are correct though.
I mean, when I got offered the gig, when Axel called me and offered me Doctor Strange, I almost said no, almost right away, because I was going to be following Jason, and I was like, well, I can only fuck that up. And then they told me who my creative team was going to be. And I was like, well, Jesus Christ. I mean, how do I say no to that? I mean, because at the very least, even if the words are dog shit, like it'll look beautiful. I mean, Jordy and Walter together, just unbelievable. You know, I haven't really gotten a whole lot of that. I mean, I think, again, like, you know, Jason and I have become really close friends now. It actually kind of started at the Marvel retreat in October. We were kind of seated next to each other. And, I don't think it's that much of a surprise. I mean, it was to me, but kind of reflecting on it now, it's not that big of a surprise that we get along as well as we do. I mean, we have very similar tastes in stories and very similar things that we want out of stories and, you know, similar aesthetics and stuff. And so, you know, I think that was a big reason why Marvel wanted me on Doctor Strange, because they had read Redneck and God Country and thought that I would maybe have a cool angle on it. It's easily the hardest book I write. I mean, Doctor Strange is not an easy character to write, and then Loki is maybe the hardest character on the planet to write. And those two together in a plot that is, I mean, it's just twisty and reveals in every issue and yeah, crazy. Yeah. And then I mean, I don't know if you've read the second issue of my Strange run, but yep, and then I was the genius who was like, yeah, let's throw the Sentry in there as well. Right. And was just like, that'll make things easier. This is actually the first interview I've done since the Sentry thing went down. Yeah. That was one of those things that, you know, to go back to an earlier question that you had, I had written when we were talking about things that I had done before, you know, Image and everything like that. I think right around Paybacks or Ghost Flea or something like that, I got hired by Marvel to do a little 10 pager in Secret Wars. It was Secret Wars Battle World, okay, number 2. And I wrote this little 10 page story. And, you know, I don't think, I mean, through no one's fault but my own, I don't think it's my best work. And I think it's, looking back on it, it was when I got hired to do that book, I was very, very nervous and I was very shy and just eat up with anxiety about it because I love Marvel. I was, you know, such a huge Marvel fan since I was a little kid, and getting to play in that world was so exciting. And so I pitched very conservatively. I pitched this story that I was like, well, okay, I'm just going to make it really easy for everyone involved. I'm not going to ask for any huge characters or anything. I'm going to do kind of a simple story and just show them that I'm easy to work with and show that I can do this. And as a result, I don't think it made much of an impression. In fact, I know it didn't, because it took me like 3 years to get back there, you know. So when I've actually been on Thanos for a lot, not a lot. I got the Thanos gig first. Okay. Even though Strange came out first, I was on Thanos longer. And so when I got the call for Thanos, in this same story applies for both things. I went in and I was like, all right, I'm not going to make that same mistake again. I'm going to pitch the craziest thing I can think of. Like, I'm just going to, because in my head, at least, I was like, well, you know what, dude, like, it's probably going to get edited down. They're probably not going to let me do all the stuff I want to do. Not because they're evil editors or anything, but because, you know, other writers have plans for characters and right, things like that, you know, but even though I kind of know in my heart that it's going to get cut down and changed a lot, I'm just going to pitch for the fucking moon. I'm just going to show them, at least in my pitch, that I can tell enormous stories and that I know how to do this and that I know how to make a splash, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so my Thanos pitch, I mean, for those who have read the first issue, it's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it's the craziest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to my complete amazement, they approved everything. They let me have every single character I wanted. They let me do everything. And then when I got Strange, I pitched. I mean, hold on. I mean, you got to think about how fucking crazy that pitch must have been when it came in. It was, Loki is going to be the Sorcerer Supreme. Where's Strange? Oh, he's a veterinarian.
Yeah, he's
Dr.
and also,
yeah. And also in the second issue, I'm going to bring the Sentry back. And then they're going to go to Asgard and then all this crazy shit, you know. And again, right, it was just me having fun thinking that, you know, I'm going to at least tell the version of the story that I want to tell, at least in this pitch document.
Right.
And then they came back and were like, yeah, it's dope. Let's do it. I was like, wait, what? I mean, it's one of those things that happens so often in comics, if you're lucky, which is you get this, you work so hard on this pitch or something, and then you turn it in, and it's happened to everybody who's fortunate enough to get books approved and get books out there, which is they call you and they approve it, and you're so elated. You're so fucking happy. And then you hang up the phone, and your immediate next feeling is, oh, shit. Like, I have to write that now. Like, oh, right, no.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be the guy who's responsible for that. Oh, yeah. No. You know, I better not fuck that up. And so, yeah, it's been crazy, man. Like Marvel, and I have a few other things that are coming up that'll be announced like early next year that, you know, I think when I started doing the first round of press for both books, I said a lot in those interviews that I keep on doing things in these books that I'm just kind of continually astounded that Marvel was allowing me to do. And I think that people just thought that it was like hyperbolic. Oh, sure. This writer, like every writer says that shit, like, oh my God, this is going to be the biggest issue ever. And like, you guys are not going to believe what happens in this.
Right.
You know, everyone says that and everything. And I get that people didn't believe me, but I hope that now as these issues are coming out, people are like, oh yeah, whoa. Like, yeah. I can't believe they're allowing him to do that either. You know?
Yeah. Like one of the, like the cool thing, like in the latest Doctor Strange was like him phantom walking.
Right. Yeah. His astral plane. Yeah.
Yeah. And his
astral form. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. With bats.
Yeah.
And you know, he's just talking like it's an everyday thing, and then everybody else is just walking by. And then before, you know, the house was always there, and he can always come in. Well, now he has to, like, MacGyver up there to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. I mean, every little crazy aspect of it. Even, like, Loki with the machine guns trying to get the door open.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, which, by the way, people, I don't know if you follow me on Twitter or anything, but there was this website, Screen Rant, who said that there was a joke from the newest Thor film in my issue of Doctor Strange. And I was like, no, there's not. That is a joke from Walt Simonson's Thor run, in which the new film is based on. Like, the idea that they think that I went and saw that new Thor film and had enough time to go and write that issue. I mean, I wrote that issue back in July.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't know what that was going to be in that film. I didn't know any of that shit.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that Loki and Strange were going to have a scene together. I mean, imagine how insane that was for me.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I've been living for the better part of 6 months with Loki and Doctor Strange in my head talking to each other. And I'm definitely overhyping my importance in all of this because I'm not at all important in the grand scheme of things. But it was very odd to me sitting in that theater and being like, man, of everybody on the planet who is seeing this film, I'm the only guy who's in charge of those two characters.
Yeah,
that is super fucking weird. And and my first issue hadn't come out yet. And I was like, man, how perfectly timed is this? Because that brief little interaction between Loki and Strange in that film is like a teaser trailer for my run.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah. And then on the flip side is like, you can't really like throw that out there because the issues aren't even out yet.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty damn cool. And then
and the same thing with the Infinity War trailer, and then that film, it's like everyone's fucking talking about Thanos all of a sudden, and I'm just like, that's me. I'm doing that. I'm in charge of that. Fucking weird, man.
Yeah. And then so I gotta ask this question. You can not answer it if you don't want to, because I know it's the Guardians book just is gonna end, right? And then we're gonna get a Warlock one shot and all that. But you're doing Thanos, so he's got to go into – he's going to have to go for the gems, right? Sooner or later, just like them.
I mean, historically speaking, yes. he's certainly fond of them.
Yeah, yeah. So, see, that's – everything, like, is just playing out and, like, firing on all cylinders for you. On all aspects of
it's
it,
it's a good time to be the writer of Doctor Strange and Thanos. I'll say that. It is very odd. I mean, I grew up reading these characters. I mean, I've been a huge Thanos fan and a huge fan of the cosmic Marvel stuff since I was a little kid. And to be at the helm of Thanos when his character's never been more popular than it is right now.
That's right.
You know? Yeah. And just the thought, like when I got offered the gig, I was actually at Emerald City this previous or this past one, whatever that is, in like March or April or something like that.
Right.
And Jordan White called and offered me the book. Of course, said yes immediately. But then he told me when the first issue would come out, and I kind of did the math in my head, and I was like, holy shit, when that movie comes out. When people go to the comic book store and say, hey, I want to read more about Thanos, like, I will be the guy writing it. Like, how unbelievable. I mean, again, like, I think a lot of fans maybe just think that the guys who write these books are kind of, you know, blasé about this kind of stuff. And maybe some of them are. I'm not. Right. I'm still such a fucking nerd about all this stuff. I'm still so like just giddy and so it's all very surreal to me, right. You know?
Yeah. And like you said, like the people at Screen Rant, right, that think that you had enough time to do that, to flip it around.
Yeah.
I mean, because like it's the whole like Nick Spencer style, right? When Secret Empire was coming out was the whole presidential thing, right? And so then it like that was like the opposite negative feedback type stuff, but I'm sure he wrote that like at least half a year prior.
Oh yeah,
to
of course.
Even coming
yeah,
out,
I mean,
right? So
like yeah, I mean in what was it? There was indifferent oh wait, I almost fucked up. I can't say this. No, there's a thing happening in another issue of mine that people will read, and I'm sure some stupid site will be like, "Oh, this is based on this thing." I'm saying, right. "Oh, it's not. Oh, it's not." You know, and also like you know, people in my family who don't really know how comics work or how the films work and stuff are like so you know. So like, did they write that Loki Strange scene because of you? Like, did you do that? I'm just like, no, not at all.
As much as I'd like to take credit for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I do follow you on Twitter, and I did see a tweet that said that you're gonna write Blade. Is that one of the things that you can't talk about?
No, I can talk about that. That's the big Doctor Strange event that we're doing in February. It's called Damnation.
Okay.
You know, Las Vegas was destroyed during Secret Empire. And, you know, Strange was unable to help with the recovery and the relief effort and everything because he was trapped in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, after this Loki thing shakes out, the second arc that I'm doing on Doctor Strange is just that. And it something that Nick Spencer and I are doing together, the main event is Doctor Strange. And this isn't anything I'm spoiling. This is all in the solicitation. Doctor Strange goes to Vegas and tries to restore it with magic. And something happens and while he is somewhat successful in restoring Vegas, something else comes along with Vegas. He ends up summoning Mephisto. Due to some circumstances, there ends up being a team formed to help him. And that team is Iron Fist, Johnny Blaze, Blade, Moon Knight, Wong, and a few other surprise characters. But it's a big, you know, it's what I like to call a corner event,
right?
You know, where it is a big kind of a not big crossover. It's not really a crossover. I mean, like my Doctor Strange run is going to tie into it, obviously. Right.
So
and
it's
then
like the Spider-Man crossover type stuff.
It's not an all-encompassing kind of a thing. It's really just the magic world, you know, which, you know, I've been describing it as this is the book where magic gets metal. Because for too long, magic has been kind of this deus machina or kind of a ethereal kind of a thing that, you know, is kind of in the corner. And, you know, I just want Magic to be badass, you know, you know, damnation, just like hellfire and, you know, and all these badass Magic characters coming together. And so, Iron Fist will tie into it. A few other books, there's going to be some one shots, one that is very exciting that I can't talk about at all. But yeah, that'll start in February. With Damnation number one. It's a four-part series with some tie-ins and stuff.
Awesome.
And yeah, Blade is going to be in there, and I'm a huge Blade fan, so I'm so excited to be able to write Blade.
Well, I have two more questions for you.
Sure.
And then I can let you go and enjoy your night.
Sure.
But now we're going to circle back to Aftershock.
Sure.
Relay just got announced.
Yeah.
And this is actually, I covered this on the Aftershock issue that came out this week, or episode, not issue, but whatever. Like Zach has done all the PR type stuff for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Randy's on art and everything, and you're on there. But, like, all the solicits and stuff, I mean, you're there, but, you know, it. So is your role more like, are you co-writing it with him?
No.
Or is it, like, you're the bounce-off guy, like, for ideas and
that? So Relay was a book that, it's based on a short story by Philip K. Dick called Souvenir. And it was a project that Lee Kramer and Mike Martz have been very interested in for a very long time, and could never really crack it, could never really find how to adapt it. I think they had talked to a few other people, and then when Baby Teeth started and we all kind of got along real well and they really enjoyed what I was doing in that book, they came to me. And they said, would you be interested in trying to crack this, like trying to come up with a way to make this story work in a ongoing comic? And so I said, yeah, I'll absolutely take a swing at it. But, you know, just bandwidth wise, I'm not going to be able to write this thing.
Right.
You know, I'm happy to write the pitch for it and happy to give you guys an outline and everything. But just, you know, I can't commit to writing it because I don't want to get stretched too thin because, you know, Baby Teeth and Redneck and, you know, are things that I don't want to suffer.
Right.
And they were very cool with that. And they said, you know, well, let's just see if it works or not. And then we'll go from there. And so I wrote this outline, dug really into it, came up with the name Relay, and turned in this pitch, and they all really liked it. And then, so to answer your question, I'm a story editor and I'm a producer on it. What that means is, you know, I've been involved in every step of the way. I actually, when we were talking about casting the book, you know, Zach's a writer that I really respect. And I mean, if you've not read The Dregs, you should go read The Dregs. It's phenomenal. I mean, I think he's such an incredible talent, and he's someone that I champion in a very big way whenever I get a chance. Whenever I get offered a book in the past year or so, whenever I get offered something that I think is really rad, but I just can't do, Zach's always the guy that I say should do it. And so that's kind of how that happened. When we were casting the book, I said, you know, Zach would fucking crush this. Like, Zach's the guy that you guys want. Yeah. And so we brought Zach on, and, you know, Zach and I got on the phone a lot and talked, and I showed him the pitch and the outline that I had written. But I made it very clear to Aftershock and to Zach that that these are just very simple guidelines, and that they are there. They're not rules, you know.
This is
something that I really want to be a Zach Thompson book. Right. I really wanted him to come on and really flex on it and show everybody what he can do. And he did. He came on and he flipped my outline and my pitch upside down in a great way. he just added so much to it. And, you know, Zach and I have a lot in common as far as what we dig in stories and our influences. We're both huge fans of the Expanse series, which is written by James Corey. There's a TV show about it on Sci-Fi, but the novels are really phenomenal. We had both read that and really loved it, and we're both Philip K. Dick fans. And so Zach came on and just fucking crushed it. I mean, he just went insane. And then getting Andy Clark on it to come and draw it, I mean, those pages are just phenomenal. Yeah. And there's one other thing I wanted to say. What the hell was it? It's been great. You know, I mean, I really wanted it to be, you know, Aftershock for the company's 2 years old now, and I'm very heavily involved in the company at this point. You know, I'm included in seeing other people's when they pitch, you know, sometimes, you know, Mike and Lee and everybody will send stuff to me to kind of look at, and, you know, and so I'm very invested in that company, and I believe in that company. And, you know, I think that a big thing that I wanted to do when I got there, and, you know, Baby Teeth did so well for them, that I kind of got, you know, not officially or anything, but a seat at the table as far, like, my opinion carries some weight over there, you know? And so
right,
it was something that meant a lot to me. I thought it was very important for the company to invest in some upcoming talent. Aftershock, especially in their first year.
Right.
You know, they really dove after A-list guys, which I think from a marketing strategy was great. And they relied on Mike Mart's connections and Joe Pruitt's connections. And they really just got A-list guys and said, hey, go nuts. Like, what's that story that you don't think you can tell anywhere else? Like, let's just do it, you know?
Right.
But now that we're getting into the second year and looking into the future, I thought it was a very good idea to start fostering some new talent. And so, you know, this is kind of an ideal situation for Zach. I don't want to put words in his mouth, you know, but, like, you know, a lot of times one of the big hurdles in the creator-owned field is getting people to pay attention. You can write the best book, you know, on the stands. But I mean, coming from somebody who, you know, for years I had books that came out that were routinely called the best book that no one is reading.
Right.
You know, and it's just because, you know, no one knew who the fuck I was.
Right.
You know, I didn't have what I have now, and people seem to know who I am now. And there's a certain amount of trust that goes along with my name and my books. People tend to think that, you know, if I do it, then something I'm incredibly proud of is that people have come to think of my books as having a certain amount of quality to them. And that's very important to me. But again, that was always there. You know, I always put the same amount of care and craft into my books. It just took a while to get people to notice, you know?
Right, yeah.
And so with Zach coming up, you know, Dreg's got a shit ton of attention, and it was a phenomenal book. Yeah. But what we're able to do now is give Zach that freedom, that ideal kind of creator-owned situation of just like, hey, we all trust you. Go fucking nuts. You know, we hired you to do this thing. Go do it. Like, we're behind you 100%. But we're also able to add my name to it as a way to kind of
this open sounds the so door. Cons-
yeah, yeah, open the yeah, door a little bit. Yeah. I don't mean this to sound conceited whatsoever, but, like, you know,
I totally get it.
It gives retailers you know, a lot of what I try and tell companies is that, you know, you have to give retailers the sense that you as the company believe in this book.
Right.
Because if you don't believe in it, then why would they?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so what we're able to do, and we're going to be doing a lot more of it. I probably won't be involved to the extent that I am on Relay. But it gives, I have a very good relationship that I've fostered over these past 5 years with comic shops. I email with them. We talk, you know, I'm a former retailer myself, And so this to me is just a way of letting people know, hey, you know, we as a company, as Aftershock, and me as a creator, I fucking dig this. And I'm putting my name on it, and that's not something that I do lightly.
Right.
You know? So that's
like an endorsement type thing.
Basically. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't want anyone to think that this is – look, this is Zach's book. It is 100% Zach's book. It's not me like ghostwriting a book or anything or like – or trying to make – like I don't want – like the last thing I want is for people to pick that book up and think that they're going to get a Donny Cates book and somehow be put off or anything by what they read. It's not a Donny Cates book, and it's good because of that. You know, I mean, it's Zach's voice. It's not at all how I would do it. And I love that, you know, if I wanted it to sound like me, I'd write it.
Right,
and I think that with this particular story, I couldn't do it as good as Zach has. I mean, it is honestly breathtaking, like the amount of scope and breadth to his story. Right. So it's something I'm very excited about. But if you see me kind of hanging back in interviews and stuff, there's a few interviews that came in that wanted me to answer questions and stuff like that. And I just I don't if you see me hanging back, it's not because I'm not proud of it or anything. It's just because I want it to be Zach.
Right, right. And actually, I think we're excited about it too. And I think next week we're going to talk to Zach about it.
Oh, excellent.
So, yeah, because when it got announced, I reached out. Well, I tried to reach out to you, like, since C2E2, like, hot time of baby teeth. But, like you said, that was, like, I didn't, for us, like, it's just a privilege to get somebody on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not like this week for you, I can only imagine how crazy of a week it was, right?
Yeah, it's been a weird week.
Yeah. And so like I didn't want to be like, hey, you want to come on and talk to our
podcast,
you know, type thing. And then like, you know, so we really appreciate you coming on. I say we, like Martin's in my pocket or something, but last question, hard hitting question.
Let's do it.
What is your favorite band or musician of all time?
All time? It's probably a tie between Guns N' Roses and My Chemical Romance.
Oh, nice.
Which I think, if you read my books, is not shocking.
No? No?
I think that my books have an element of both of those things in them. A close second would be Queen, and Pantera.
Uh-huh.
You know, it kind of depends on the day. There's definitely days where Pantera is way the fuck up there.
Right.
I mean, but GNR number one, I think. I in high school, I was actually in a GNR tribute band. I was Axel.
Oh.
There's pictures that exist of that somewhere that will
probably
remain hidden. But yeah, GNR for sure. And then MCR to me is a very weird one, because I was and remain today an enormous fan of all their albums. But it's odd because Gerard is now a friend of mine, just by virtue of being in comics, you know, and he's someone that I talk to, you know, now and then and text with a lot and everything. And so it's always very odd when I say that MCR is one of my favorite bands, because like it's just kind of my buddy's old band, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right.
So in that way, you know, GNR still has that mystique, and you know, and Gerard's just a nerd. He's just my nerd buddy, you know. And, but like growing up in high school, he was very much like this mysterious, you know, gothy, screaming, angst-ridden guy, you know. And and now come to find out, he's just a comic book nerd.
Yeah,
you know,
just a nerd. Yeah. He's one of us. You know,
yeah, he's one of us in a big bad way. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So GNR for sure.
Cool. Well, I'm going to wrap it up. I know you said earlier that you will have more stuff for Aftershock later, like next year type stuff, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. You know,
or are you just going to play the behind the scenes type thing?
I don't know. There is another book that has been greenlit that I've signed up for. But again, it's just one of those bandwidth things. It's you know, and I'm also timing. I'm exclusive to Marvel. So the amount of creator owned books I can do is somewhat limited because I have specific carve outs in my Marvel contract.
Right.
But even if those weren't there, you know, I'm just writing a lot right now. And the last thing I want to do is just crank something out just to crank it out. And Aftershock feels the exact same way. And, you know, maybe he's not going anywhere anytime soon. So I'll probably just focus on that for the foreseeable future. But the other thing will probably just be a mini series. It might be late next year, but I'm launching a new creator owned book early next year over at Image. It's just going to be a two or three new things at Marvel next year. So it's going to be a full deck for 2018 for sure.
Cool. Definitely. And if you could ever write something and have Phil Hester draw it, that would be
awesome. Oh my God.
Awesome.
It's my dream. It's one of my biggest goals in comics, man. I've maybe pitched that guy like every creator-owned book I've ever done has gone across Phil's plate first. He's one of my number one. I mean, he's the closest, in my opinion, he's the closest thing that we have to like Golden Age classic Jack Kirby, Ditko artists.
Yep, totally agree.
And he's a good friend of mine too, and getting him to do the few covers that he's done on Baby Teeth was just a dream come true. And I've always said that if Gary Brown gets into an unfortunate car accident, then Phil Hester might need to step up to the plate.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you want to let everybody know where they can follow you at?
Yeah, sure. Just on Twitter is the best place. Facebook is for my grandparents. but Twitter is at Don Cates, DonCates.
All right. And I am at Rombar316. Martin is at Geekvine. And the show is at Aftershock Pod. And thanks for chewing the fat with me tonight, buddy. I appreciate
it. Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you.
And that's it. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye.
You are beautiful on the inside. You are innocence personified, and I will track you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I have carved out this soul made of stone, and I will track you down and sell you out.